The opinions and recommendations in this podcast are those of the participants and not necessarily of ausleisure.com.au. This podcast covers the subject of alcohol consumption and as such is aimed at adults, although it does not contain any subject matter that would be offensive to children. Ausleisure.com.au and all participants remind our listeners that alcohol should always be consumed responsibly.
It's a fine time to have a drink. Maybe with some mates for a date. Sounds good now, don't you think? Forget the world, don't worry about money. Let's be pleasure seekers, honey. And let's check the grapevine for advice. Oh, yes, indeed. A frosty beverage might be what you really need. Will it be red or white? Which way to go? It all looks good tonight. Let's check the grapevine for advice.
Hi, this is Richard Maguire from ausleisure.com.au. And you're listening to the Ausleisure Grapevine podcast with Greg Nicholson from Doc's Liquor. Greg's a highly experienced and much respected retailer and former vintner from Victoria. And we'll be discussing the current trends in wine and beer, new products and techniques, along with some tips for buying, choosing and storing wines and beers. So, pour yourself a large one, sit back and relax as we take you on a wine and beer journey.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Ausleisure Grapevine. I'm Richard Maguire and again I am with Greg from Doc's Liquor. Hello Greg.
Hi Richard, how are you?
Very well, mate.
See you again.
Yeah, and you, how have you been?
Oh, very well, yeah.
It's good. Well, now, what are you going to talk to us about today?
Well, I thought after our last session, which we got so very technically involved in winemaking and wine, and thought we might lighten up a little bit, and it's coming around towards the end of the year now, and thought we might talk about Christmas and what you'd like to drink for Christmas and also some of the traditional Christmas drinks that come around and,
yeah,
and which ways we can actually conduct our Christmas dinners and either the cheap or the expensive way. And I thought I'd give you some recommendations on some different new products that have come in as
Lovely.
Well. And
yep.
We should be able to nut out a good Christmas for everybody.
Excellent.
What I thought we'd start off with, I know we did get very technical last time, we were talking about winemaking process. Part of the winemaking process that we didn't include was champagne or sparkling wines. Myself, I'm absolutely fascinated with champagne and sparklings and have been for a number of years. And I thought we might just briefly touch over how champagne is made. And I thought I'd talk a little bit about the history of champagne itself because of the fascination of the place. And then I'll talk about some of the champagnes on the market. So we've got basically three methods that they use when they create champagne. The one we're going to concentrate on today is the traditional French method. It's called Méthode Traditionnelle. It's the only process that the French actually use. Now, there's three grapes that go into making up champagne. There's Pinot Noir, Pinot Meunier, and Chardonnay. Now, Chardonnay, of course, we know is a white grape.
Yeah.
Pinot Meunier is a black grape, and Pinot Noir is a red-black grape. And we always see champagne comes out in a clear white juice. Mm. And how this is created is by not having skin contact with the actual grape when they press the grape, so that they're not getting the red colours coming through the grape.
So they get rid of the skin.
Yeah, they press the grape so that only the juice comes out, but you're not getting the colouring
right
coming through. So then you just pick up those light colours. Now, where you get something like a rosé in a champagne, then you'll get some skin contact, and that's where you can get those pinkish colours coming through.
Yeah.
So a la Carrington Blush, which is a famous cheap Australian sparkling, right through to something like Moët Rosé, which is more expensive, but still using the same sort of process. We have very strict laws within France itself within who can produce champagne and what they call appellation de contrôle, which is the processes and only certain places that can produce champagne, certain regions, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But the actual process itself is fairly simple. They take a cuvée or a blend, and will blend from these three base grapes. As I said, most French use the three grapes. A lot of the Australian processes now are just Pinot Noir and Chardonnay together because of the ricey fruit flavours that come through. Mm. And the French tend to, by putting in the three grapes, you tend to get a bit more complexity within the wine. And I think we actually talked about this when we were talking about Chandon. These guys are real scientists and they sit there for hours blending these different base grapes together from flat wines before they produce them into sparkling wines. The Champagne itself has always really been a flat wine, and it wasn't until the 1800s that they started to discover the bubbles in the wine or the secondary fermentation which created Champagne, and that kick-started it. And for years, everyone has always turned around and associated Dom Perignon with being the inventor of Champagne, which is actually not true. Dom Perignon developed Champagne, and he actually spent many years trying to get bubbles out of wine, because Champagne originally was, as I said, is all flat. And it was a flat white wine and wasn't even considered that good. They were shipping a lot of the wine to England. And during the shipping period and also the storage period after the winter, the summer would kick in and would start a secondary fermentation. And that's where the sparkling came from. And there's been a lot of theories about when it was actually created. So I think the paperwork or the documentation that they had, which was around 1857, around Dom Perignon's time, the English actually turned around and said, we invented Champagne, produced paperwork from 1853.
Yeah.
So years earlier, they had stated that they actually created it, but I think it was really the French at the end of the day that created it through discovery. What the English did do, though, was created better bottles, which were stronger, so that the bottles didn't explode as much, because they were using standard wine bottles and got 24 psi in a bottle, which was virtually a car tyre pressure. And a lot of the champagne they made just virtually blew apart after 6 months because of the exerted pressure. And so they created better bottling, better muzzling systems. And this allowed the French to go on and develop better systems. And then, of course, over the years, the thing became famous because all of a sudden people started to drink champagne, and all around the world there was this great demand for it. And so that's where it all started. So, after they've done all the basic blending, then they put everything together in what's called tirage, which is a mixture of the base wine, sugar and the yeast, and put them in the heavy bottles. They put a crown seal on top like a beer bottle, and then they leave the bottle for secondary fermentation, which is also called enfriage. And this is where they turn the bottle upside down and put it into a rack, and it produces the carbon dioxide. The alcohol volume rises, the content, and the longer the fermentation takes, the more that they get the yeast cells, which we've talked about before, that come down into the neck of the bottle. And this is usually caught into a little plastic plug. And then what they do is turn the bottle is hand, used to be hand turned, it's all done by machine, although in France now traditionally they still hand turn it. And then what they do is they turn the bottle up, they pop the crown seal off of the top, they freeze it in a little bit of brine before they pop it, and they pop it, the plug comes out, the dead yeast cells come out, and then they top it up with what's called expedition liqueur, which is just the final dosage of just a bit of sweetness. And then they put the cork in and the muzzle at the wire, and there's your bottle of champagne produced. And I think we were talking last time about your visit to Chandon, and the wines like the ZD, the zero dosage, which they just keep the crown seal. They don't put the cork on there at all. They don't put any expedition liqueur, so it's virtually bone dry. As a sparkling when it comes out. The terms of champagne and sparkling are now very definitive in Australia. Back in the 1990s, we had a lot of the generic terms in Australia disappeared out of the market. So we used to have Bordeaux, Claret, and Champagne, Burgundy, and all these sorts of styles. They've all disappeared off the market now as far as Australian labels go. And at the time, like everyone else, I sort of thought, what are these arrogant French doing? And it's actually been a great boon to Australia because it's clarified the Australian market and what we're drinking.
Yeah.
So we're no longer drinking a claret, which is a mixture of Cab Merlot or Cab Shiraz or whatever. And we're no longer drinking what we call champagne because it's Australian sparkling wine. So in reality, the places that we're sourcing the product from is its true location. And that's, we know that that's what we're getting. That's what we're actually drinking. So it may have increased prices in some ways. But again, I think at least you know what you've got and what's there. And I'd certainly love to be drinking something that I know is a genuine product. If I really want something outstanding, then yeah, that's the way to go. And as far as champagne itself goes, the history of the region is just absolutely fascinating. You can see why over the years, how hard they have fought to keep product alive in one region. It's a passion for them. It's their family's history, their life's history, and they've had so many different countries tramping through the back corner of Italy and France and Germany, and just coming through up into the Champagne region, because it can only be made within, my figures are right, 54 degrees longitude, 57 degrees latitude within the region of Champagne itself. And there's two main towns, which are Rheims and Epernay, and everything comes out of there and those surrounding areas. And they've even had civil wars in the 1800s because of the secondary regions not being considered good enough to produce class one or Grand Cru grapes within the region. So most of the top end stuff from all the famous houses like Paul Roger and Bollinger, all these places have been around that Rheims and Epernay area. And some of the smaller producers from down a little bit further south haven't been considered or aren't considered within the Appalachian control and been good enough. And they've gone to war and actually ransacked the regions and had their own civil wars within there. And then, of course, the world wars came along and absolutely decimated the place. In particular, the First World War. And the region of Champagne endured 10,000 consecutive nights of bombing, and yet they still produced a 1914 vintage and a 1915 vintage. And the winemaker or vigneron from the Champagne regions around there went around and picked out the grapes out of the trenches with the dead soldiers around. I think one of the most famous ones was Paul Roger, and who were right on the border on the edge. And he actually made a 1914 vintage and went out with donkeys in the mustard gas with the bombs going off and still came back with grapes. And they produced, and they still say to this day, it was one of their greatest ever vintages as far as flavour goes. But of course, everyone ransacked all the Crayères, the cellars, which are underneath, because a lot of the Champagne region was built on chalk cellars, which the Romans actually dug under the earth, because the chalk was very soft, and they hid a lot of champagne under there, they hid cars under there, they put everything in there. But of course, the soldiers eventually found it, and even in the end, even the French soldiers, just whatever. But for years and years, they fought to protect the industry. And then within the Second World War, the same thing happened again. They got ransacked and they set up different marshalling control points. And all the German wanted out of that whole region was the champagne. They just wanted to control the champagne market. So you can see, look, after so much history and fighting, I think they deserve to be able to hold the name Champagne. Proudly display it. So it was quite fascinating to read about all that and learn about that. I think it's an amazing background to have for any region. A wine in particular.
And is there an optimum temperature that it should be drunk at?
Most white wines, between 10 to 17 degrees. In Australia, we tend to drink things a lot colder than normal, which is just typical us, everything's going to be cold. But I think 15 to 17 isn't too bad, as long as you just keep in touch with the core ambient temperature outside. And as long as you're enjoying that, if it's too cold, it's going to kill the flavour. And if it's too hot, it's just not enjoyable. So as long as you've got the coolness to keep the fruit alive, it should be fine. It's something that's just a personal pleasure. And it does, white wines and champagne warm up very, very quickly anyway. So once you get them outside, it takes about 3 minutes and they start to rise. So, just got to drink faster.
Amen.
So the things, I think, at the end of the day is Christmas time now is coming around, and of course we all like to drink various and different things at Christmas, and
socially, of course.
It's a time where everyone loves to get together and catch up with friends. I suppose the big thing is, what budget do we do it on? How much do we spend? Who's actually conducting the party? Things like that. So there's a number of different ways we can go. Depending on who's doing what or who's paying what. I mean, always with us, because I'm the wine person in the family, I always end up bringing the wine over. So we get a wide, varied selection of whatever. But again, goes back to what you enjoy. So it doesn't have to be extravagant or expensive. It just has to be something that will cater and please all your guests, and something that you're happy with, and you haven't necessarily spent a fortune, but you haven't been bottled out of your dollar at the same time. So I think the best bet is, depending on the size of your actual function, is to try and look at a cross base of products, and I would have sparkling or champagne, depending on it. What we'll do, we'll try and simulate both sides of the story, either a rich and a poor sort of scenario. Definitely like something based product. You can either go into a lot of good stuff around $10 to $15 at the moment. Things like Form Clark, sparkling, Grand Berge, all these sort of wines around that $15 to even $20 mark. Again, depending on the numbers, if you want to go a little bit more on capacity, but a little bit cheaper, great products around like even Jacob's Creek and Dunes, which is a new one on the market, which is quite good. Around that $12, $14 mark. Don't have to spend a fortune pleases everybody. And if you just, again, look at your market, cater for the ladies, always have your bubbles for your kickoff at the start of the event. And then you'll need some white wines, particularly with our hot Christmases. Mm. So things like Sauvignon Blanc are very popular nowadays, easy to drink in summer. Chardonnay, Pinot Gris, a new on the market. We've talked about those this year. So again, perhaps just get a little mixture of everything.
Yeah.
Pleases your whole party because you've got at least something there that someone is going to enjoy along the line. That someone doesn't like Sauvignon, they'll drink Chardonnay. If someone doesn't drink Chardonnay, they might like Pinot Gris or a Viognier or something. Introduce them to something drinking wise.
And a couple of ice buckets dotted around.
Yeah. So, there's a summer, some water and stuff.
Keep them cool.
And then the same with your red wines. Have a little bit of a mixture, a bit of Merlot, a bit of Shiraz, a bit of Cab Sav. The big thing nowadays is blends. A lot of people are drinking Grenache Shiraz, Shiraz Mataros.
Yeah.
Some of the Italian styles we talked about, Sangiovese, things like that. So you go out and buy a box of mixed things that at least you can open up a whole heap of different stuff. People can try it and enjoy it and say, that's a great wine, I really like that. And they'll tend to sit on that wine. Someone else might like it, but they'll have a Merlot or, you know, traditional Shiraz. So just, have a base cover of everything to see you through the day, and you should get through plenty of beers, of course, at the end of the day. And even some sticky styles like dessert wines, which, again, don't have to be terribly expensive, but you can chill them down great with the puddings and the desserts. Yeah. And $10 to $15 dessert wines are fairly common now. I think that's a fairly good rounded out Christmas drink. And again, size wise, it just depends on your catering size.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to go really top end, then I would start off with champagne. And there's just a number of stuff you can get out there. My suggestion would be maybe jump off of the wet wagon and try something a little bit different. Try some Bollinger or Verve or Paul Roger or something a little bit left of centre that you might not have tried before. If you want to go absolutely top end, Dom Perignon or Krug, about $220 a bottle. Depends again how intimate your Christmas is. And then again, open up a big white, you know, get something like a Gioconda, $60, $70 for Chardonnay. Get a big red, something like an Armand Ra, $120, and then finish it off with either a big sticky or, if you can afford it, a Chateau Yquem, $400. That's sort of going, you know, top end, but that's giving you two ends of the scale, so it just depends on intimacy and how much you want to spend, you know, to enjoy a bit alcoholically wise out of your Christmas.
Wise words indeed.
So, well, you can mix and match. So that would be a few different ways to do Christmas.
And of course, if people out there need to maybe drop you a line, just ask a few questions, it's the normal email address.
Just send away on the normal email address and at cockbaldwin@yahoo.com.au or you can send through Oz Ledger now.
We have it up, grapevine@ozledger.com.au. Yep. So now, Greg, it's time for you to recommend a couple of wines for us today.
All right. Well, I thought we'll, again, stay with our Christmas theme and I'll stay with the champagne theme, and I thought we might look at a few really outstanding champagnes. Not cheap. These are in the expensive class, but well and truly worth it at the end of the day. The first recommendation is Renard, which I think I have mentioned before. It's the oldest champagne house in France. Mm. There's only three champagnes that they make. There's one called the Renard NV, which is a vintage, which is a blend. It's $100 a bottle, but magnificent. I really class this as one of those value for money wines that's, even though it's near, it's really well put together and stands up well and truly above a lot of the other base wines around that money on the market.
Yeah.
Big name wines here as well. So they also make a Blanc de Blancs, which is 100% Chardonnay, which is quite classy, very refined, has a lot of fruit flavour. Probably a step above the NV, well, and that's about $120 a bottle, and they also do a rosé, which is about $120 as well. I'm a bit of a rosé nutter. I think it's one of the best rosés I've had, besides Dom Perignon rosé, which is about $120 a bottle. But yeah, fascinating. My next recommendation would be Bollinger Grand Anis, which is about $95 a bottle. Again, very, very high class. So well put together. Just intense flavours, lovely nutty brioche toast. Has everything in there. So I know it's big dollars, but it's, if you want something really well worth the money.
Yeah.
My last two recommendations, Dom Perignon itself. I don't think I've had a bad vintage of it. We were just talking about it last night with a friend, and we were talking about truly great drinking experiences. And I remember before I actually was right back into the wine industry, my wife dragged a bottle of 1976 Dom Perignon out for my birthday, which I didn't even know what it was at the time, and we've been virtually drinking base Australian wines for a number of years and weren't sure what they were. We weren't into wines at all.
Yeah.
And she'd had it laying in the bottom of the cupboard for about 10 years, and I really consider that one of the highlights of my life of drinking wine. It was just magnificent. And the last one is Cook.
Yeah.
Again, when you try Top End Cool, and again, we're talking $280, that's fascinating. I've said it many times, they're expensive wines, but you have to step outside the square sometimes and say, let's try something completely different. Let's not worry about the money. Life's too short, let's enjoy it. And you want to enjoy something, try something, take the time to do it once in your lifetime and really enjoy, because it's, without being wine wanky, it's fascinating to try something with that depth and that character and say that was a truly amazing wine that I've just drunk.
Well, I hope to try some of those one day, Greg.
You should do, Richard.
I think I should. I should. Well, wise words as always from Greg from Doc's Liquor. Thank you very much, Greg.
Thank you very much.
And to all our listeners, we hope you have a fabulous Christmas and a wonderful New Year, and we'll see you early January.
Yeah, have a great New Year, everyone. We're going to wind up for this year. And we had a few technical problems last month, which slowed us down a little bit. But, we've really enjoyed doing podcast this year, and
we've
enjoyed listening, and hope everyone has a really good Christmas, and have a drink with us.
Indeed. Cheers.
Thanks very much.
Well, that's it for this episode. Thanks go to Greg and everyone at Doc's Liquor. If you would like to contact Doc's directly, they have stores in Bulwyn North and Ringwood North, both in Victoria. You can call them on 03 9859 1111, or 03 9879 9200, and please be sure to tell them that Greg sent you. Docs also have a blog with all of the latest news and information. You can find that at docslicker.bigblog.com.au. Oz Leisure Grapevine is published every month, so if you like this podcast, please be sure to subscribe to the feed through iTunes and others. Full details on how to do that, as well as the topics covered in this episode, contact details, past episodes, and notes on future episodes can be found at www.ozleisure.com.au/grapevine. If you have any comments on the show or suggestions for future shows, then please send us an email to grapevine@ozleisure.com.au. We want to produce the content that you want to hear. Thanks for listening. This is Richard Maguire for ozleisure.com.au, your guide to Australian holiday and leisure activities. Until next time, see you later.
It's a fine time, have a drink. Maybe with some mates for a date, sounds good now, don't you think? Forget the world, don't worry about money. Let's be pleasure seekers, honey, and let's check the grapevine for advice. Oh, yes, indeed. A frosty beverage might be what you really need. Will it be red or white? Which way to go? It all looks good tonight. Let's check the grapevine for advice.